Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Malnutrition has become, quote, the new normal and now affects one in three people worldwide. That's according to the 2016 Global Nutrition Report. The report finds that 44% of countries are facing serious levels of both undernutrition and obesity. It says hundreds of millions of people are malnourished because they are overweight, and rates of obesity and overweight are rising in nearly every country in the world, while undernutrition is falling. Globally, few countries are succeeding in tackling obesity. Obesity leads to non-communicable diseases like diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular diseases, and chronic respiratory diseases. We will discuss malnutrition on the program today. And joining us here in the studio for more on the subject is Asma Latif. She is director of the Bread for the World Institute. Ms. Latif, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you with us. And we will discuss malnutrition in a moment with Ms. Latif. But first, VOA reporter Joe DiCapua has this story.
Professor Jonathan Pinckney says no one health issue has the most impact on human health or engenders more debate about how to tackle it than obesity. Pinckney, a professor of endocrinology and diabetes, took part in the annual Plymouth Symposium on Obesity, Diabetes, and Metabolic Syndrome on May 21st. He says obesity is a complex issue that involves more than calorie intake.
I personally feel that this is such a wide field. There's so many issues. There's politics, there's biology, there's everything you could imagine, there's the food industry. And I think that sometimes we're all a bit guilty of just maybe concentrating on one of those areas. And you could go to a conference anywhere in the world where they spend days just talking about bariatric surgery or fizzy drinks. So I think it's right to talk about everything under one umbrella.
Bariatric surgery restricts how much food a person can eat, sharply reducing caloric intake. The professor gives his definition of obesity.
When body size becomes so huge that it impairs people's day-to-day function and quality of life and well-being and personal relationships, you know, that's kind of devastating. That tends to occur at a higher level of body weight.
However, Pinckney says those not considered technically obese are also at high risk for poor health.
That's the more important point for the health of the population. You know, all the diabetes and heart attacks and cancers and things. I mean, that's really caused by lower levels of weight gain. As you can see, it's just the average weight of the population drifting up because we're just sort of eating the wrong things and not really sufficiently active.
The Plymouth Symposium showed that much is known about the biology of the brain and appetite control. But Pinckney says, as one speaker pointed out, knowledge is not enough.
That is completely overridden by things going on around us in the environment, food advertising, food industry, the way that it's all marketed to everybody, including children. And I think the simple fact of the matter is, you know, our bodies are very smart and beautifully built, but it's just that the biological systems that would keep us slim are just completely swept away by the pressure from the things going on around us.
And he says it's difficult to do anything about it, whether in Britain, the U.S., or developing countries that have adopted a Western diet heavy in sugar, salt, and fat. The annual medical cost of obesity in the U.S. is nearly $200 billion. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Ms. Latif, you heard this report. So many elements in this report that I find, you know, interesting, incredible, really. More than $200 billion in the U.S. to tackle obesity. I mean, this is really a big number.
It's a huge number. And the reason for the high cost is the impact that overweight and obesity have on an individual's health. It leads to chronic diseases like cancer, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. And so the cost is spiraling in not just the United States, but as the Global Nutrition Report says, in every country in the world. Mm-hmm. The Global Nutrition Report points out that in the United States, having one obese member of a family can reduce the family's income by 8% because of the impact of that person's health on the family's budget.
That's incredible. And really, when we think about malnutrition, I know a lot of people connect it to undernutrition. But obesity, overweight, is malnutrition as well.
Absolutely. Obesity is another sign that your body is not getting the nutrients that it needs for a healthy life. Malnutrition basically means you're not getting the vitamins and the minerals that your body needs to grow and be healthy. Either that means you're getting too few of those. And where a person becomes obese, a child becomes obese, is where the calorie intake is large, but it's not matched by the nutrients. So yes, it's a severe form of being unhealthy in a way.
And also perhaps the calorie intakes is more than the amount of exercise or maybe active lifestyle.
Absolutely, and exceeding the dietary guidelines,
yes,
for sure.
Wow, yeah, that's incredible. Now we see that in the global a nutrition report also says that demonstrates that while some children do not have enough food and face undernutrition, others are becoming more overweight. I mean, how do we understand this?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the issue of poverty and inequality. Mm-hmm. In the United States, 15% of the population is food insecure and dependent on safety net programs for their food. Foods that are rich in nutrients tend to cost more. If you have a limited family budget where you've got indisposable items like paying your rent or healthcare expenses, the first thing in your budget to go that has any flexibility is food. And so you're either not eating the required number of meals a day, or you're opting for the foods that are more affordable. And unfortunately, those tend to be the foods that are higher in calorie, lower in nutrients. And so, and it's the same in developing countries. And that's why we're seeing a burgeoning of obesity and overweight in developing countries. People are really struggling to make ends meet, and the choices of food, especially in poor parts of the world, is limited. And yeah, so income has a lot to do with nutrition and, yes, and health outcomes.
Yes, because even when we look at a country that is wealthy like the United States, when we look at the rate of obesity, is it fair to say that it tends to be high among communities that are perhaps economically challenged?
Yes, okay, definitely. And partly it's because even short bouts of hunger at any time during the year can affect the way your body processes food and manages the nutrients that,
yes,
it gets.
Yes.
And so you're setting up systems in your biology that are that make it harder for people to lose weight,
yes,
when they have or maintain their weight when they have food. And so it's really important that people have a regular access to food, and that,
yeah,
that food is of
and
a
good quality
nutrition
food.
Quality.
Yes,
yeah,
good quality food. And the report really looked at several different aspects of the nutrition and malnutrition topic. Now, what else did you find interesting or maybe unusual, something that really spoke to you in the report? I mean, there are so many findings that are, for me at least, surprising. But what did you find? What other findings did you
well,
deem interesting?
It's really becoming very clear that nutrition is an economic issue. This is not an issue that is just about a person's well-being, although that's important. But for countries that have a high burden of malnutrition, either in the form of stunting or in the form of obesity, the costs to the economy are huge, because people who are suffering from malnutrition have health consequences that come with costs, but these health consequences also prevent people from learning well, from earning well. It affects their productivity. And mm-hmm. for countries that have a high burden of malnutrition, all of those individual costs add up. And the Global Nutrition Report really points to the fact that in Asia and in Africa, 11% of GDP is lost due to malnutrition.
Wow, that's incredible. So clearly the economic impact is we cannot deny that. So that when we look at the increase of obesity worldwide, why do you think, I know you touched on this earlier, but how is this trending everywhere, it seems, at the same time? And even in sub-Saharan Africa, I mean, what is happening?
Well, in a way, it's... It's part of a trend, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, we are seeing rising incomes all over the world, and that's a wonderful thing. Globally, you know, around the world, we've reduced poverty by half since 1990. And that's amazing. Fewer people are living in poverty. They are using their additional income for foods that are higher in calorie content and protein. And so that is part of the issue. And, you know, for people who were malnourished earlier in life, you know, these additional calories and foods are manifest, it's absorbed differently, and
yes.
It has health consequences for them. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing is the alignment between agricultural policy and health policy. I think, you know, we have not done a very good job in aligning our policies and making sure that that agricultural policies are supporting the health outcomes that are so important to individuals. And as countries are growing and that there's much more information and knowledge about the damage that malnutrition can do, I think the call to action from this report is really that we need to make the political choices now to really set up systems that really work for nutrition, that support nutrition. For example, breastfeeding rates are actually declining around the world. And that is quite devastating, because the science suggests that breastfeeding is critical to immunity, to lower levels of obesity, to child survival, actually. So
why is it declining?
Because we don't have policies that support a woman's ability to breastfeed in the first exclusively in the first 6 months
and
of life.
What such policy will entail? Because I mean, for those of us who are from countries like continent like in Africa, a continent like mm-hmm. in Africa, we grew up and our mothers grew up seeing women breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Is it modernization? Is it looking at preserving, I mean, the breast? I don't know. Why will this happen?
I think modernization is part of it. I mean, I think as countries are rising in income levels, GDP levels, and work is being more formalized, unless you've got policies that help a woman, either maternity leave policies or and things like that, that support a woman's ability to breastfeed, it makes it much more difficult. And you know, the Lancet, the British Medical Journal, The Lancet came out with a report earlier this year on breastfeeding and on sort of the policies that are needed.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I mean, if you read that report, it is the silver bullet.
Yes.
You know, breast milk is the silver bullet in many ways. And so finding policies that support that is critical.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will continue this discussion with Asma Latif. Today, we are discussing malnutrition in light of the 2016 Global Nutrition Report that just came out. So we will have that in a short moment. We will continue to talk about malnutrition. And we take a short break and we will have the news with Sanusi Diallo. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
UNAID and the United States President Emergency Plan for the AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, announced recently that there has been a 60% decline in new HIV infection among children since 2009 in the 21 countries in sub-Saharan Africa that have been most affected by the epidemic. New HIV infection among children in the 21 countries dropped from 270,000 in 2009 to 110,000 in 2015. Equally impressive are gains made in bridging the treatment gap among children. In 2005, fewer than 1 in 10 children had access to antiretroviral treatment. This gap has now been reduced to 1 in 2. The results were published in the new report on the fast track to an AIDS-free generation. A recent study says Ebola virus hotspots are more widespread across Africa and are carried by a greater number of animal species than previously suspected. The study was led by a scientist from the Center for International Forestry Research, also known as CIFOR, and other international university. The report found numerous potential animal carriers, including rodents, primates, hoofed mammals, civets, and shrews. In areas within Central Africa, such as the western part of the Congo Basin and Western Africa, and West Africa are very favorable area for the Ebola virus. The research was published in the Science Journal Mammal Review. Nairobi-based incubator NALAB has partnered the United Nations Population Fund to launch the iAccelerator, focused on promoting youth sexual reproductive health and rights. The program, rolled out in collaboration with NALAB, is part of the regional initiative of the UNFPA East and Southern Africa Regional Office, founded by the UK, and has been developed with the support of Kenya's National Council for Population and Development and the Ministry of Health. The iAccelerator, launched under the IM initiative, aims to encourage young people to discuss, learn, and understand their sexuality and sexual reproductive health by engaging with the right source of information in a safe and unstigmatized environment. And that's the wrap-up for the latest health news.
Thank you. That was Sanusi Diallo with the news. Welcome back. You are joining Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou. And today we are discussing malnutrition with our guest, Asma Latif, who is director of Bread for the World Institute here in Washington, D.C. And now, before the break, we talked about malnutrition, obesity, undernutrition, and we really focused on obesity. Now, let's move to undernutrition, which is an issue that your organization really is tackling day in and day out, among other things that you do. The reports also show that even though obesity is increasing, undernutrition is still a problem in some countries. So tell us about the landscape when it comes to undernutrition. Where do we see pockets of undernutrition that are prevailing, so to speak?
So absolutely, undernutrition is a huge problem. It affects 1 in 4 children who are stunted in the world. So there are about 36 countries in the world that have a very high burden of undernutrition. Many of them are in Africa, in Asia, some in Central America. So the issue is very important for these countries because, as I mentioned earlier, high burdens of undernutrition really do have economic consequences. It's really specifically important for children in that 1,000-day window between pregnancy and age 2, when malnutrition and undernutrition really does the worst damage, and damage that's really irreversible. 45% of preventable child deaths is due to undernutrition. That's almost half of preventable
that's
child
incredible.
Deaths. It's really huge. And for children who survive, the consequences are lifelong. Stunting is being low height for age, but that's just the outward manifestation. So it's what you see. But really what's going on inside is what is the ravages of malnutrition on a child's physical well-being, on the cognitive development. And all of those things affect the child's ability to learn over the long term to earn a living. And so that's why these issues really are getting more notice in the economic realm now.
Interesting. So then when we look at the way forward, we talk about the fact that, you know, there is this goal with the Sustainable Development Goals of reducing or ending malnutrition by 2030. How realistic is this goal? I mean, is it even possible?
Absolutely, it's possible. Many countries have made dramatic progress against malnutrition by doing a number of things. You know, there's been political leadership from the top, implementing the right policies, devoting the right resources. So we've seen dramatic progress in countries like Ghana, Peru, Brazil. And so those models give us some approaches that can be replicated in other countries. There's 57 countries have joined the Scaling Up Nutrition movement.
Okay.
That's an exciting thing. That means they are recognizing that malnutrition stands in the way of their future and stands in the way of economic development, and they want to do something about it.
What is part of the commitment? Just one or two.
Part of the commitment is having a very senior level person, either in the president's office or the vice president's office, that's really overseeing the implementation of the National Nutrition Plan. So the countries commit to developing a plan and then having a very high-level political leadership. And what's key about nutrition is it's not a single, it's a multi-sectoral issue.
Absolutely.
There isn't a single sector or ministry that will solve the nutrition problem.
Yes.
You have to work across ministries. And so having somebody at a senior level really pulling people together and ministers together saying, you know, what is the agriculture ministry going to do about this? What is the women's empowerment ministry or the social protection programs? How are they all helping to support our nutrition goals?
Yes.
I think that's critical.
That's very, very interesting and very important indeed when you talk about the multi-sectoral approach, because, yes, it entails more than just looking at food, and there is a lot that goes into it. Now, what is the way forward in terms of if we're looking at innovative ways to tackle malnutrition? What do you think are some of the innovative ways that could be adopted?
Well, I think part of it is getting more nutrition out, getting more bang for the buck. So
uh-huh.
Wherever we are implementing programs on agriculture and health, in water sanitation and hygiene, on women's empowerment, using those existing programs to also touch on nutrition and have nutrition outcomes, strength to really get nutrition outcomes out of existing investments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot to learn about how to do that. There's a lot of things we already know that work that can be scaled up immediately with the right resources. But then how do you get better nutrition from existing investments in all these other sectors? I think that's where the innovation needs to happen. And there's an increasing understanding of that. And then, you know, what gets measured gets done. So having better data to really build the evidence base so that countries can learn from each other and really be able to share best practice and what is working in one environment then can be applied to another.
So tell us about some initiatives or perhaps one or two examples that is are being done by Bread for the World Institute.
We are an advocacy organization.
Okay.
So we are, trying to make the case that the U.S. government in particular should really be investing more of its development assistance in nutrition. This year, Bread for the World's grassroots members are engaging their members of Congress on nutrition funding. We've also, really been working with our coalition partners. We've got lots of partners in Washington and around the world to really make the case that the U.S. government needed a nutrition coordination plan. And I'm really excited and delighted to say that today at the launch of the D.C. launch of the Global Nutrition Report, the U.S. government announced its first ever global nutrition coordination plan, which really will cover 9 U.S. agencies that are working in developing countries and try and coordinate so that they're getting better nutrition outcomes for their investments across these agencies. So advocacy is important as well.
Yes, yeah. Indeed, it is important. Now, malnutrition often is talked about as one of the consequences of miseducation or misinformation. Can you tell us about the link and how this is really being addressed?
Absolutely. We need to do a lot of education around nutrition. People don't have sometimes the basic knowledge about why nutrition is important and what nutrition nutrients are needed at what different stages of life. So really, that is key. And then there's a lot of things that could be done to change behaviors around nutrition. For example, hand washing is so important to nutrition. One wouldn't think about that, but if your hands are not clean when you are touching food, you are more likely to get ill or sick from that.
Yes.
And diarrhea is a huge cause of malnutrition in children because they lose a lot of the nutrients with diarrhea. And so really just becoming very aware of these basic things you can do. There's a lot of misinformation about breastfeeding. I think women sometimes feel if they're undernourished that their breast milk is not good enough for their child. And so, they are
so
then...
So it is not the case?
No.
Okay.
And they're, and then there's a lot of inappropriate marketing of breast milk substitutes that suggest that somehow those are as good as breast milk. And if you don't have the right information, you might believe that. So I think there are a lot of things that need to be done just from a from an education perspective to really raise awareness. And I think, the growing political commitment around nutrition gives me hope that we will begin to break down some of the myths and really help people sort through what nutrition they need and what's best for their children.
So finally, because we're going to run out of time, just quickly, if you can kind of sum up or give us your final words when it comes to this global issue of nutrition and perhaps something about the report. What are your final words?
Well, you pointed out that we now have a goal within the Sustainable Development Goals that is about ending hunger and ending malnutrition in all its forms. And that really does situate nutrition within the broader issues of development. And the Global Nutrition Report really points to the fact that nutrition is actually now connected to at least 12 of the Sustainable Development Goals.
Wow.
That will mean we have to work across sectors, across goals with new partners, and then I think we'll see a rapid acceleration of progress.
We hope so. Ms. Latif, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
And that was Asma Latif, Director of the Bread for the World Institute, joining us today. Thank you to our listeners for joining us wherever you are around the continent and in the world. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Sanusi Diallo for the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.